somebody in there? I know, I was so nervous.
Okay.
Bill's on his way.
Okay, calling to order the December 15, 2016, joint meeting of the Kirkland Planning Commission and the Houghton Community Council. Can I have the roll call, please?
Carter Bag.
Here.
Colleen Cullen. Eric Law Liberty.
Here.
Mike Miller.
Here.
Glenn Peterson.
Here.
Matthew Pruitt.
Here.
Sandeep Singhal.
Here.
And then the Houghton Community Council. Kelly Curtis.
Here.
Brian Gothrop. Bill Goggins. Did you say he's here? John Kapler.
Here.
Betsy Pringle.
Here.
Elsie Weber.
Here.
Rick Whitney.
Here. Brian has an illness in the family. I forgot to mention.
Okay. We have one item on our agenda tonight. That's a study session on the Houghton Everest Neighborhood Center Plan and 6th Street Corridor Study. Before we get to that, we always take comments from the audience. I have the sign-in sheet. If there's anyone in the audience who arrived after it was handed to me or just feels compelled to give public comment anyway, you're always welcome to. But we'll start first with Mark. Man. Is that Mark? Is there a Mark in the audience?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah. If you give your full name for the record, please. Thank you.
I'm Mark Simpson, and I'm part of the team that's been working with PCC to look at what's been going on and hopefully give them some sort of advice. And unfortunately, the developer, this is the night of their big Christmas party, or they would be here with us. We've been to several meetings and listened to a lot of the folks that are here, heard some really good things, and we've been paying attention to what's been presented. And we haven't had a chance to really digest it, obviously, and we would support some more amount of time before this is made into a final decision to digest that, look at that, and give some input if we can.
Mr. Simpson?
Yes.
Question, I didn't ask this when the representative of PCC was here last time, but what is the existing square footage of the store, and what would PCC like?
The existing store is about 12,000 square feet. There's about 8,000 square foot of sales floor, and the rest of it is back of house sorts of things. Their current model, and we've done quite a few of their stores, is about 25,000 square feet.
So about twice the size?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, next tonight, we have Lisa McConnell.
Good evening, Planning Commission and Houghton Community Council. I'm going to give you my Christmas list. I was here last time, so I'm just going to run through some items really quick. I'm going to separate them, first deal with building and then traffic. First, underground the power and telephone lines would be lovely. Two, parking, as we found at our last Houghton Neighborhood Association meeting, some of the businesses are going to require some surface parking that people can pull up to the building. We found with Ace Frames, underground parking for them wouldn't work as people walk in with awkward or large items of artwork that need to be walked straight to the door. We have a lot of physical therapy groups that also would, their business would be hurt or discouraged if they don't have surface parking in front of their building, in front of their business. I would like no residence housing as turnover is too great and it doesn't promote engaged or long-term neighbors. Density limits still need some clarification about what that means for our neighborhood. Design Review Board has only been touched on. I'm reluctant to bring it up as we haven't had a very good, it hasn't served our residents well on our last project, which was South Kirkland Park and Ride, TOD. And I'm reluctant to, and hesitant and not trusting of a Design Review Board process that's actually gonna work. I would, on to traffic, I would like no drive-thrus in the area. I don't want a Chick-fil-A or a 85th Street Starbucks in our area, so I would like drive-thrus banned in our neighborhood center. I'd like the inclusion of data from the traffic report of Northwest University Master Plan. There's expected 2,000 to 3,800 additional trips on 108th expected from their master plan development. That has not been discussed, is how that's going to affect our neighborhood center. That's a lot of additional cars and trips generated by something on the 108th 6th Street corridor. Transit options that work for our neighborhood center, we need to have bus stops in that neighborhood center. I know it impedes traffic flow, but we need to include those, because if we're going to have people actually using transit to access our neighborhood center, they need to have bus stops there within the neighborhood center. If we're not, and I talked a little bit about the pathway that runs from Northeast 66th Place west past the north side of the fire station between Northwest University office and the fire station. A lot of people from the east side of 108th access the neighborhood center through there, and that needs to be considered in the plans as public access pathway. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, and would you let the record reflect that Mr. Goggins arrived at 7:01? Okay, next we have Mike Repass. Repass? If you could correctly pronounce your name.
Yeah,
Repass.
Great. I'm one of the owners of the Houghton Village Shopping Center. And we went in partnership with PCC when we bought the center 28 years ago, and we have kind of merrily gone along for 28 years, you know, doing fine with our one story, and I suppose we could keep doing that forever. I mean, it actually wouldn't. My brother and I are, and his wife are partners with PCC. And we didn't initiate this whole deal. The city or whoever is, you know, wanted or has come up with this possibility of rezoning. And I'm not an architect. I'm really not a developer. My brother is, but he's at the Seahawks game, so he couldn't be here. But from what I understand from talking with Mark, who's the PCC's architect and the developers who've been here representing PCC, PCC's employed them to kind of go through this process. I doubt we would develop it. We being my brother and I and PCC, we would probably ultimately sell the property, because we're of an age and just interest that we don't, and the risk and so forth of doing an enormous project. But the main thing I've heard from talking to the developers who've done other projects with PCC and the architect is a three-story, and I'm sure the city has and the planners have some information on this, but a three-story development is kind of difficult, because we right now have one story, and we pretty much have the parking, we're kind of all parked out. And so if we would go up two or three stories now, we wouldn't have enough parking for people if we had two or three times as many stories. So I think so then the other issue is, if you do underground parking, there's a question, economically, does it make sense just to do three stories? So I think that's part of the thing. If you were going to do a development there, I think ideally it'd be better to have it five stories, four stories, or whatever that makes sense. That's kind of my feeling. The only other thing I would say is, and I don't know if this is feasible or not, but I thought, you've got Google just a block or two away, and if you built a new development with apartments above, however many you'd build, it would seem to me, if I was a 30-year-old working for Google, this would be a great place to live, because it's right next door, and then you just walk two blocks to where you work. So you're not putting any more traffic out on the street or doing any more driving. So that's my two cents worth.
Thank you. Is there anyone else here tonight who did not have the opportunity to sign in but would like to give public comment on this topic or any other topic?
I gave one already.
Yes, Mr. Carlson. If you could state your full name and address for the record.
Chris Carlson. I live down across from Best High School. We really appreciated you coming out and visiting with us in our neighborhood. It was actually pretty remarkable how many people did show up to the feedback meeting. And what was remarkable to me is, you know, when we managed to get 70-some-odd individuals who live in the area out to give feedback, that out of 70-something people who lived in Houghton and Everett, there were 70-something people who were not in favor of five stories on that corner. We have a traffic problem in our neighborhood. We can't get to our pizza places. We can't get to our soccer practices. If your soccer practice starts anytime between 4:30 and 6:30 and it's up at Everest, you're not going to get there and get back before you have to go get them again. So we have a traffic problem that adding stories to that center fundamentally is not going to help. And I know it's lovely to think that, gosh, people who work at Google would love to go there. Do you know what the average tenure is for someone who works at Google before they're poached by Microsoft and vice versa? The current generation does not work somewhere for 10 years. They last 3 to 5 years in their job before their job moves, but their house doesn't. And then they're another car on the street. So on behalf of our neighborhood, if you can't give us more lanes from that center to a freeway, please don't give us more stories. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Is there anyone else in the audience tonight who would like to give public comment? Last chance. Okay. In that case, we'll move on to the only item on our agenda tonight, a study session on the Houghton Everest Neighborhood Center Plan and 6th Street Corridor Study. Angela.
Yeah, I'm just going to give a brief introduction, and then Jeff Arango's here from Burke Consultants to actually give you a presentation, more information on the continuum that we talked about at your last meeting. We did have an open house from 6 to 7 tonight. Some of you were here, some of you weren't. But Jeff's going to, as he gives his presentation, he'll tell you some of the things that we talked about. I think most of the people in the audience were there, and it felt like it was useful. I hope they did. We'll do that again before the next meeting. It's just a chance to talk about some ideas in a more informal way. So Jeff's going to give his presentation, and then when he's finished, I will talk to you a little more about the schedule. We are proposing that we move the schedule out a little bit more and have a chance for everybody to talk about this in more detail. So with that, unless you have any questions for me, I think Jeff can go ahead with his presentation. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. And we'll also have a presentation on transportation, too.
Great. Okay, great. Thank you again. My name is Jeff Arango. I'm an urban planner, urban designer with Burke, and I'm going to give a presentation tonight on sort of some additional detail on some of the scenarios and concepts that we talked about at the workshop and talked about at the last meeting. Before I do that, I'm just going to dim the lights because there's a couple slides that are a little hard to see.
Please tell me nothing.
Start flashing. And I can't stress how excited I am not to have the screen flickering at me tonight.
We all took our inner season.
So again, thanks for the opportunity to be here. And we're going to walk through a couple of different things here on the Neighborhood Center. So starting with this graphic, this is something we presented at the larger public workshop. It's what we're calling the development continuum. There are three scenarios that we're looking at as part of this plan. There's the preservation scenario, which is, you know, essentially do nothing, leave the zoning in place. And certainly we've heard a lot of feedback from the public that support that option, and that's certainly something the decision makers will have to consider. There's a modest change scenario, which would be to increase the height from 30 to 35 feet. And then the greater change scenario, which would be increasing to the 45 to 50 feet that's called for in the Central Houghton Plan. You know, on the spectrum of the continuum, one of the things that we've been tasked with is, you know, what's likely to happen under any of these scenarios. And I'd say in a general sense, the preservation scenario is exactly how it sounds. You know, we've just gone through two real estate cycles, and I guess we're still in the midst of the second one. Over the last, you know, 15 years or so, and there really has been very little change in this neighborhood. So if the community's desire and values are to kind of keep things the way they are, then I think the existing zoning and development standards that are in place would likely do that. Not to say that there wouldn't be any change, but probably not a lot. The modest change, again, would just increase the height 5 feet to allow for 3 stories. That could allow for some more minor infill, but as we showed at the public workshop, a lot of the properties are built out in terms of parking, so they can't add square footage and meet those parking requirements. The modest change scenario could have with it some transportation improvements. You know, we've heard a lot of, obviously, concern around traffic, which is an issue. But we think the three-story scenario is likely to maintain surface parking, and it could be associated with some improvements to streets and public spaces, but probably would not require the level of investment that would be required to support the greater change scenario. And so we'll walk through a little bit more of our thinking and why we came to that conclusion here. So this is a chart which is in the draft report, and it's what's called a residual land value analysis, and it looks at basically the cost of doing, so the value of a development minus the cost. And what you see here is basically the delta of that, the difference. And that number is essentially the value of the land per square foot. And so the value of land is based on the highest and best use, right? So the city right now has essentially capped it at a 2-story. So the value of the land is generally based on being able to develop what's out there today or up to 2 stories. And through the rezoning process, what the cities actually would do if you went to one of the more intense scenarios, either the modest change or the greater change, you're essentially increasing the value of that land. And that's sort of where you see the black line there. That's the value that's being increased from zoning. And so that, from the upzoning. And so that's an opportunity for the community to capture some of that value to meet its goals for the neighborhood, depending on what those goals are. So if the goals were, for instance, what's in the Central Houghton plan to make it more pedestrian friendly and improve streets and public spaces and basically support greater change, then the increased value of the land presents an opportunity to do that. Both in terms of larger tax base, ability to require improvements from developers as properties are redeveloped. So that's kind of the basic concept. And so as you can see, as you start to get over to the 5-story option, and this is actually based on the PCC site, you start to get more land value, and that's why you can support you know, potentially more amenities, higher quality materials, and things like that. One thing to point out, you know, 6 stories is kind of the cap for that type of construction, which is called 5/1. A lot of communities set building heights at, you know, 6 stories. I understand, of course, that that's not under discussion here, but it is one factor to consider that it may make this area slightly less attractive to compared to other areas where people could choose to develop. But I think because Kirkland's such a desirable place to be in a strong market, I think, you know, it would generally start to work at 5 stories. So at the last meeting, there was a comment around community values, right? What are the community's values? And I think obviously that would differ somewhat from person to person. You know, there is no one set of universal values. But I do think it's important that that gets somewhat solidified through this process. The goals and policies, some of the goals and policies in the Central Houghton Neighborhood Plan really support quite a bit of change there. And so I think there's still a question, based on what we're hearing from the public, of whether this really embodies the community's values. We heard some strong comments this evening that this doesn't represent their interest and values for the neighborhood. So I think that's an open question. I think if we had some clarity that this was really what the community want, then I think we could provide some clearer guidance. But my sense from the public process is, you know, we're not quite there yet. So looking at the different scenarios, you know, what do we think the likely outcomes are? And I'll just touch on a few. So in the preservation, again, we think things would largely stay the same. There wouldn't be a whole lot of change. In the modest change scenario, likely to preserve surface parking. Interestingly enough, in the online survey, You know, we heard a lot of opposition to taller building heights. We also heard a lot of desire to sort of transition surface parking lots. We've also heard some comments that the surface parking is, you know, very convenient and we should try to preserve some of that. So the modest change scenario could result, again, in some transportation improvements, probably not going to fundamentally change the pedestrian environment, probably going to maintain a lot of the curb cuts and potential vehicular pedestrian conflicts. The modest change scenario could include design guidelines and design review, something not in place now. And we've heard from the public, you know, some disappointment with how some of the design review process has sort of turned out for projects in the neighborhood. And I'd say that is something that's probably universally shared by a lot of people in communities with design review. It is just a very challenging process to get right. So I'd say that is fairly typical. There could be improved connections to the CKC as part of the modest change. We heard a comment earlier about the need for a connection on the north side of 68, and that could be something that could be accommodated through redevelopment or other means. For the greater change in amenities scenario, this is where you really, I think, would need to have a better sort of public realm, for lack of a better term, better streets, better sidewalks, less vehicle pedestrian conflicts. You're talking about a greater level of redevelopment here, but that also provides opportunity to address some fundamental issues. Could include, you know, incorporation of green infrastructure and better stormwater management, the design review I mentioned earlier. Greater housing choices, a reduction in surface parking, and supporting kind of city fiscal sustainability. So I think it really comes down to, you know, what are the community values, what does the community want, and then that in turn would provide some clarity around what the appropriate decision is. This diagram just kind of illustrating that same point. So through upzoning, the community is creating value. Obviously, that's value for the property owners and the business owners, but there's opportunities for the community to capture some of that value through tax revenue, impact and development fees, and the ability to fund street and public space improvements, whether that's through participation by the city or through development incentives. And so you combine that with the community values, and I think, you know, there's a little bit of open question on that, but the community values can get reflected in the neighborhood plans, in the zoning, in the design guidelines, you know, what's important to the community, what are the things we want to require, incentivize. I've put a few up there, but certainly it's the community that decides what its values are and not me as a consultant. And so if you put these two together and it's done right, you know, the goal is to achieve the desired community outcomes, whether it's more retail, better streets and public spaces, reducing surface parking, which we heard from the public, better pedestrian and bicycle infrastructure, make it more safe to walk around, greater housing choices, retain existing retail, transportation improvements, green development. And, of course, there could be, you know, potential for other impacts. Obviously, we've heard a lot about traffic, so there's certainly more work to be done in that regard. But this is just at a conceptual level, how that works and why that upzoning, if that's the community's desire, represents an opportunity. So at the last meeting, we discussed, you know, a desire to see some more specificity in what the options are for design guidelines and other development standards. So city right now has design guidelines for pedestrian-oriented business districts. They just simply don't apply to the Houghton Center neighborhood. Those guidelines include sort of base guidelines that apply throughout all of the pedestrian-oriented business districts, and then there's specific guidelines for certain areas. So there is a good base to start with, and there could be additional guidelines developed that are very specific to the Houghton Neighborhood Center. They address things like sidewalk, sidewalk width, sidewalk design, building frontages, building modulation, storefront design, architecture, incorporating public plazas and open spaces, blank walls, public art, a lot of different guidelines that could be applied to the Houghton Center neighborhood. Another concept that's been brought up is the use of upper-level step-backs. So it's basically setting back the upper stories to reduce the building mass at the street level and to, you know, provide more light and air and, you know, kind of minimize the impacts of a larger building on the streetscape. These two, the picture and the diagram, are actually from the city's existing design guidelines. So there are concepts already in place, and those could be modified to be more specific to the Houghton Center neighborhood. So that is something that there's already a precedent for in the city of Kirkland. It just is not currently being applied to Houghton Center. Excuse me. So this obviously is an aerial of the Houghton Center. The white line is the boundary of the district. And we're just going to kind of walk through some options for how we might address city goals, land use, public space improvements at a kind of a high conceptual level. So one of the issues right now, which we brought up, is 68th Street. It's not extremely pedestrian friendly. Doesn't really support the goals in the central neighborhood plan currently. It's about 60 feet in width, so it's fairly narrow for that type of street. Has very narrow sidewalks, lots of curb cuts, not very safe. So one potential option I think that's been discussed would be to expand the right-of-way from 60 to 80 feet, potential to add on-street parking. It could be parallel parking. It could be angled parking. One, it would provide convenient short-term access to retail. Also, it's been found that parking buffers pedestrians from the traffic and makes it a more safe and inviting street. So I think, you know, if you think about your favorite pedestrian streets, most of them have on-street parking. Obviously, this would need to be balanced with the need for vehicles to move through the area. But it's something that I think should at least be considered. If it was angled parking, could be about 110 parking stalls, parallel parking about half of that, so about 50 stalls. What this would allow would be an increase in the width of the sidewalks from about 5 feet to 12.5 feet, which would expand the portion of the right-of-way that's allocated to pedestrians. Right now it's about 16% of the right-of-way is allocated to pedestrians. Under this concept, it'd be about 30%. And there are a lot of different variations on how the street could be designed. This is just simply to illustrate some possibilities around integrating better pedestrian environment and perhaps on-street parking. Another concept would be to provide a north-south connection across 68th Street. One of the issues in Houghton Center is that the lots are very large and there's only sort of limited street frontage. The lots are very deep as well. And because of the lack of local circulation within it, you end up with all of those curb cuts, which impacted the pedestrian environment. So this is a concept that would show a north-south connection from the PCC property down towards the Met Market. It could serve as a public open space. It could perhaps have some parking along it, sidewalks, places to sit, eat outside, things like that. And it would also support more retail frontage along the street face. So that's something I think may be worth considering by the community. The other thing related to that would be to have better circulation on the northern border of the Houghton Center. So the arrow on the top portion would connect from 6th Street, provide local access to those three properties, and potentially a connection to the CKC, which is something we heard earlier. There is no connection on the north side to the CKC currently. Another topic came up in the open house is making sure that the development does not negatively impact and actually would enhance the CKC. So having very tall buildings along the edge of the CKC would I think, not be in the interest of the community. So having some sort of buffer to minimize impacts of taller structures, if that's the scenario that the community chooses. And then encouragement for what we'd call trail-oriented development, so pedestrian connections from development to the trail, and there could be some orientation or architectural expression to make sure that the development is compatible with the CKC. Similarly, on the south edge, you have lower density residential development, and oftentimes, and I know this is true in parts of Kirkland, you have a buffer from more intense development to less intense development. I don't believe right now the zone that applies to the Met Market has a buffer from that residential zone. But if the community chooses to go in the direction of the more intense scenario, I think having a buffer area to minimize impacts on the residential area to the south would be important. And that may or may not include some sort of access connection east-west along the southern border. So this next, we're going to look at land use. So this is essentially like a land use, be a designation or zoning. So the modest change concept looks at a 35-foot height limit, and that could be potentially applied throughout the neighborhood center. We have the other concept is the 55-foot height concept, and we've obviously heard a lot of concern around impacts of taller buildings along 68th and 6th Street. One way to potentially produce kind of a hybrid scenario would be to have a 35-foot height limit along the street. If the right-of-way was widened to 80 feet, it would be, 10 feet back from where the back of the sidewalk currently is. But that would be a zone where the height would be limited to 35 feet, minimize the impact of taller facades on the major arterials. And then perhaps through incentives that are developed with the community that reflect the community's values, there could be the opportunity to increase height to 55 feet if some of those amenities are provided. So it could be open space or contribution to street improvements, could be incorporation of green design principles both for the site and for the building. And that 35-foot zone could be, anywhere from 30 to 50 feet. So that's kind of one of the concepts that we've been looking at. This is a picture looking west on 68. So just to remind everyone some of the things that we just talked about, you can see, very narrow sidewalks. There is bike lane on this side, but there's no buffer. These cars can be moving pretty fast. It's not very safe. There's all these curb cuts here. There's no development along the edge of the street. We do find that the best pedestrian-oriented streets have something, interesting along the street edge. So I'll wait for my next comment until I get to the next graphic. So this is a section, again, looking west on 68th. Again, this is just a diagram just to kind of illustrate at a different perspective what we're talking about. So this would be an 80-foot right-of-way, 12.5-foot wide sidewalks, two travel lanes. And in this scheme, it shows angled parking. If you had parallel parking, even just on one side, you could support three travel lanes. If you had parallel parking on both sides, you could, you'd have a wider right-of-way for perhaps a dedicated bike lane. So there's a lot of flexibility in this. And I think one of the other things to point out is there's actually some sense of having an appropriate relationship between the width of the street. So going from the edge of the building to the edge of the building, in this diagram, it's 80 feet. The building here is 35 feet. And so there's a rule of thumb in urban design that you don't want the width between the buildings to be more than twice the height of the building. It gives a sense of enclosure and has been found to make areas more pedestrian-friendly. There could, of course, be an additional setback here at the street edge if that was something that was desired. And then this zone would be the 35-foot zone, maybe 30 to 50 feet. And then through the incentive program, the community could allow the taller building heights back from the street. So the base height would be 35, and the bonus height would be 55. So it wouldn't necessarily be applied universally throughout the district. This is one example of kind of a similar street. This is in Queen Anne. This is 4- and 5-story buildings, so taller than what we showed on the last graphic. But it's a fairly new streetscape improvement. It has angled parking. This street doesn't serve really as an arterial. So I don't think there's the same concerns around through movement of traffic. So, there are definitely some differences, but this just give you a sense of kind of a street that has one new development and two fairly new streetscape. this is a development in Fremont. It's a PCC, And the reason I'm showing this is not because it's exactly what we're showing here in Houghton Center, but interestingly enough, this PCC and this Starbucks are all part of the same development. They're built on the same concrete podium, and they have shared underground parking. This is a three-story building. This building depth off of, I think this is Fremont Ave, is about, it's a kind of a tapered building, but it's about 40 to 50 feet wide. And then the PCC, this is a obviously a much taller structure. But the first floor is a grocery store, partially sunk below grade, and then you have housing above it. And this is an oblique aerial of the same development. So this is the Starbucks. It's got a, looks like it has a green roof there. It's a smaller, looks, you would never actually know it was developed together. And then you have the larger building in the back. So somewhat of a real life example based on the, some of the concepts we just showed. So this is just simply a summary of some of the ideas that we just talked about. We'd love to hear from the public, you know, more input on sort of what's important to them. But, you know, the concept of allowing taller building heights only in specific areas and based on incentives, I think, is one of the main concepts we presented tonight. Limiting height along the major arterials could be something that, well, is something that we heard from the public. So we wanted to kind of provide a little more clarity and variety between the different scenarios and not make them necessarily absolute. The concept of, you know, widening the right-of-way on 68th Street to provide some additional pedestrian space and perhaps public parking, incentives in the form of additional building height to improve public spaces, encourage development to orient to the CKC. There could potentially be a bonus for having a first-floor grocery store if that was something the community wanted to incentivize. So it can actually be based on what the uses are. You could allow a height bonus only on larger properties. That could be more of a master plan development, so over a certain size. And there could also be requirements for green infrastructure and green stormwater design, including green roofs, if that was a desire of the community. So that's my presentation. Happy to continue the discussion and answer more questions. And I'll turn the lights back on.
Some of it was in our pack, not all of it was.
Yeah, okay.
A lot of that was new to me.
Yeah, that was okay. I'd like to have some.
Does anyone have any questions?
Sure. Yeah, Jeff?
Yes.
Question regarding the modest change. Yeah. We've heard both from the folks in the audience, and I think you guys mentioned it last time too, that everything is for the square footage, they've maxed out the parking.
Yeah.
And so
Jeff, you need to speak to the mic over there.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry.
So my question is it practical to think that there's even that intermediate step of modest change? Because if their parking is maxed out and they can't increase their square footage, is there any incentive? I mean, they redevelop, or would they even redevelop?
I mean, I wouldn't say never, because, you know, as I said in the larger workshop, you know, people that do development have different goals, different aspirations, and have different assumptions. So I wouldn't say never, but the concept that we looked at was if you were maintaining your surface parking, as you went up, your building got smaller and your surface parking got bigger because your square footage went up a little bit. Your building footprint's smaller, your surface parking is bigger, and you end up with less retail. So it seemed to be kind of moving away from what we've heard from the community, which was more retail and less surface parking. When you start to look at underground parking, it does not look really attractive, and probably the only way that the more feasible way potentially would result in a lot of the first floor actually being parking. So you have like a retail band, and then you have the first floor is actually parking. So I wouldn't say never, but I would say, yeah, it seems very unlikely from the analysis that we've done and also through all the conversations that we've had with property owners in the area. The other thing to keep in mind, and why that's also true, is you know, those properties are pretty high value. I mean, you have a Met Market, a PCC, a Bartels, and a number of other great establishments there. And if you're a property owner and you bought that 30 years ago and you're maintaining high rents and low vacancies, you have to have a real big incentive to want to redevelop it. And three stories is not really that. So that's the other thing to keep in mind, is that these properties are likely producing very good incomes as they are today. So how do you get the opportunity cost high enough to make it worth it for someone to do it, I think is the question. So yeah, I don't think the three stories is particularly likely, but we wanted to offer something that was sort of an intermediate step. Yeah.
Thank you.
It's a question for staff and Jeff. This is a great presentation. Has this been posted, or will it be posted to the city's Houghton Everest webpage?
It will be. I guess
great.
Not exactly like this.
Okay.
Yeah,
you had a lot of great graphic. The pictures I think were great, and the graphics. I mean, to the extent that we can replicate that would be.
I can do it. The only thing is, I just designed it for PowerPoint, so we can do it, but I don't want to make everyone go through the animations. It works well in a presentation, but not great online. So we'll do that.
Yeah. We'll come up with something that we can use.
It's simple. Just take a few minutes to fix it.
I have a question.
Yes.
That I don't think you have an answer to, but there's an awful lot of mixed use development being proposed everywhere, frankly.
Yeah.
I worry a little bit about retail burnout or retail. I think we all have this vision of these adorable shops and restaurants and boutiques, and I want to, you know, and like you said, this interesting streetscape. But there's also this huge development down at Park Place. There's also this huge development at Tatum Lake. Bridal Trails is talking about redeveloping.
Yep.
We've got both sides of the street here and all over. I mean, I think you talk about incentivizing things. I've definitely heard from the neighborhood, we want to keep our grocery stores. We want to keep our drugstore. We want to keep our glass shop. And, you know, the cute things that the people in the neighborhood. But with lots and lots more retail, what we found at the Park and Ride, we wanted to have all this retail. Nothing's gone in there. I'm just also worried that, you know, you'll just end up with more nail salons and vitamin stores and T-Mobile stores and things that are not particularly interesting to walk by in your neighborhood. And so, I mean, is there any way to get that juice going in a neighborhood center, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I certainly think the integration of housing helps that. But, you know, we even see that Seattle struggles with that, even in their denser neighborhoods, you know, with the pedestrian retail frontage requirement. And oftentimes it's either not full at first or it's kind of a marginal business. Some communities will allow transitional uses until the market is there. So they want the first floor to be designed for a storefront, but maybe they allow something in the interim until the market is there. But I do think part of the retail, to make the retail work in this type of environment, is the experience. There is a great article, and I know it's a little bit of a different situation, but there was an article in the DJC, the Daily Journal of Commerce, today about the success of University Village and why it's successful when all these other areas are failing. And they said it's about the experience. It's not about going to buy something.
Right.
It's going to eat and walk around and see people. It's like why people go spend $4 on a cup of coffee at Starbucks when they could have a 10-cent cup of coffee at home. It's we want to be around other people and have that experience.
Right.
So I don't have a perfect answer for that, but I think, you know, high quality, good experience, and certainly this area has a ton going for it. I mean, you have downtown Kirkland up the street, you have the CKC, you have the lake there. I mean, you have all the other elements that a lot of communities don't have to make it, I think, attractive for people to live here and shop here. And I think, you know, operators like PCC, why they like the mixed use concept is they have customers living on top of their store. Not that that's providing, you know, most of their customer base, but it works well for them.
That didn't work for the transit-oriented development.
Yeah, well, park and ride, I got to go back and look at that a little more. But park, you know, retail at a park and ride sounds different to me.
Could I just add something, too? One of the things we've heard is the whole idea here is we want to keep the grocery store, you know. And I think we could put something into the zoning that would require that. I mean, again, you don't get the additional height unless you have a certain size, maybe not as specific as a grocery store. I've heard the term general mercantile, so then it could be a drugstore or a grocery store or a hardware store. Or we could get as specific as a grocery store.
Okay.
So, I mean, I'm not sure if you're worried about that too, but some of this is having, we don't, a lot of small retail doesn't always work. You need some draw, larger draw, and we could put that in. So.
Yeah. Good question. Yes, sir.
I don't know if this question's fair at this point or not, but I'm gonna ask it anyway. And I think when it's important when we're doing this kind of stuff to kind of grasp what the challenges is. And is it fair to say that some of the challenges here is that there are some amenities that have been made that the community finds pretty desirable, but those amenities are not a possibility without five stories, which may not be a desire of the community. Is that a fair way to classify one of the challenges we're dealing with here?
I would say, well, I mean, the city could always go and add amenities, right? I mean, the CKC is on the, you know, western border, and that's a great amenity. So it's not impossible. It's just that with the condition that it is now to go in and, say, make that street improvement and add wide sidewalks and put all that money into it to support a bunch of surface parking lots and retail that isn't pedestrian-oriented would not make any sense. And it also wouldn't stimulate, I think, the development that would benefit from that, right? I mean, the purpose of having wider sidewalks is you can, you know, sit outside and eat, or you can, you know, walk safely down the street and socialize with people or whatever. So there would be a mishmash of land use and the design of public spaces that would be not a great use of city resources. So I'd say yes, but not necessarily in absolute terms, if that makes sense. I mean, the city could buy a parcel and put in a little park, and people might like that, but it wouldn't have the integration and the synergy that it would if there was more redevelopment. Yeah. Yes?
It's my understanding Metropolitan has, like, a 20-year lease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 15, I think.
So if anybody, unless somebody's going to sell all of Nelson's properties, I would say that grocery store is going to be staying there.
Yeah, certainly. I think the comment about the grocery store is more relative to the other thing
is, I know that Bartels leases up within the next 2 years. I'd sure like to see a drugstore stay there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, Mr. Markle was at the last meeting, and he said exactly what you said, that they have, I think he said, a 15-year lease. But he said that, you know, the size of the store is less than they would like, you know, longer term. Same with Bartels. So, yeah, I don't think there is an immediate, you know, threat of Met Market leaving, because they made such a big investment.
That Bartels is the smallest one in the chain.
Yeah. But I think, you know, regarding the PCC, I think they, you know, they have a more antiquated facility, and so I think are looking to perhaps do something shorter term. Yeah. So, anyways, any other questions?
Yeah, Mr. Bass.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yep.
I have two technical points and then two questions.
Okay.
My first technical point is, having been on the DRB, which Margaret will testify, we just use a standard of 15 feet floor to floor for retail and 12 each for residential. That'd be a 39-foot building, not a 35.
Yeah, we were using 15 and 10. So the other thing is that the grocery stores, at least all the PCC ones, tend to be sunk. They like the pedestrian visibility kind of down into the store. So that would reduce the height slightly.
I think there are two most recent ones that they're not that way. But
Columbia City is.
Well,
The one in Fremont is.
Green Lake.
What's that?
Green Lake and Bothell.
Are those Well, the Green Lake, I haven't been to the Green Lake one.
The old one on Aurora, the new one.
Yeah, no, I have not been to that one. I just know that of the urban grocery stores that Mark has worked on, the three that I can think of all have sunken first floors, and that doesn't have to be one way or the other. But yeah,
so it could be done.
So we made those assumptions, with 15 feet and 10 feet on the other
second course. Technical comment real quickly, and from a former board member who was so happened to be a building official and former chair of the State Board of State Building Code Council.
Okay.
4-over-1 works really well because you could do 4 stories of residential in wood framing. You go 5, you don't. Just for you.
Okay.
Now to my two questions.
Okay.
My two questions, one of which, the 55 feet shown on the Met Market site, it's abutting residential. In other words, you could see it on the north end where you're looking at Google and some of the warehouses and things where there shouldn't be any adverse impacts.
Yeah.
But south side up against the residential?
That was the purple area and the southern edge of the diagram that I showed actually called for a buffer. Yeah. So the purple on the bottom, that was meant to signify a no-build zone where there would be a buffer.
But with the present south wall of that building be possible at 55 feet, or would you then step back further? I would think you're going
to. Yeah, I think you would step back further, but there isn't a real specific width. I think the diagram was supposed to point out exactly what you described, that there needs to be special consideration along that southern border to minimize impacts on those residences. Right now, you could do 30 feet, and there's no buffer. But I think, certainly if you go higher, you would definitely, I agree with you.
Yeah.
Carter, do you think a horizontal setback regulation wedding cake style would be better, or a mass modulation breakup along that south border? Or combination?
Combination.
Okay.
Yeah.
And my last question, just out of curiosity, on that 80-foot right-of-way width?
Yeah.
Could one possibility, if you didn't have the street parking, it would be to have 2 through lanes each way? And would that improve? I guess the traffic person's coming up. But would that improve the traffic?
Well, you could have, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, you could definitely fit 2 lanes if you didn't have on-street parking. Yeah. Yeah, you could do that.
My question.
Okay, Mr. Miller, if we could get the lights back on.
I'll fall asleep. The the design guidelines that you were showing up there is pretty standard throughout Kirkland, the upper story step backs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But you showed one picture up there that had gabled storefronts. And I was just, from the last meeting and tonight again, I think that we need to get out of the box of just looking at step backs and get a little bit more creative about what the facade of the building looks like. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with the development in downtown Lake Oswego? There's it was an entire block, which is probably the same size, well, maybe even a little bit smaller than what you have here, but what was interesting, they redeveloped the entire block. And I think it's a mix of 3, 4, maybe 5-story buildings around the perimeter.
Mm-hmm.
And the parking was interior to the buildings. They had a drive-through on each block that got into the parking that was completely surrounded by buildings around the outside that were fronting on the street. And I went into it once a number of years ago, and I don't believe it was structured parking. It was just one level. But it was really impressive. And if you haven't seen it, you should take a look at it.
Okay, I will.
But in that particular case, too, again, they had 3, 4, and 5-story buildings around the perimeter, but they were all gabled buildings. And they were different. They were relatively short storefronts with different colors, different buildings.
Yes, it looked like, well, yeah.
Yeah, They got out of the step back box look and got a lot more creative. And that's, for me, when we start talking about building height and so on, and, you know, then we, somebody mentioned density earlier this evening. I'm a lot more interested in what the exterior of the building is going to look like, because that, to me, is what's going to create a more vibrant and interesting community.
Yeah.
And just having step backs,
yeah,
you know, go up two stories or three stories and stepping back 30 feet or whatever it is, you still have a box.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly agree with you. Let you finish.
Oh, that, I'm pretty much done. So I would just like to, and I'm not an architect, and far from it, I'm would totally stay out of that. But this whole concept of just a box and step back, is we get caught up in that. And I'd like to move the conversation away from that and getting a whole lot more creative with the facade of the building.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you, and our intention was not to focus overly on the step backs. I think it was brought up as a discussion point last time, and we wanted to show an example of that. But I think you're totally right. I mean, one of the things that makes pedestrian streets better is sort of that variation in the building facades, and not just this upper step backs, but how the building modulates itself to create visual interest, the width and the appearance of the building. I mean, skinnier buildings, like you described, are much more pedestrian-friendly and visually interesting than large monolithic facades, and there are certainly ways that those can be broken up. So I completely agree with you. The one thing I will say, which is extremely hard to do, is to sort of regulate architectural style. I mean, I certainly think you can do that if you're in a historic district or there's really an overwhelming. So in urban design, you know, we try to not get into that too much. I mean, we show photos and things as examples, but it's really hard to sort of legislate that kind of treatment. But
yeah, it's a more expensive construction process.
Yeah.
But one way to get around that is, you know, we're talking about 5-story or 55-foot or 55-foot height limit.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's a bonus height, you know, if you go to a peaked roof, you know, you get another 10 feet. But you don't get dinged for trying to do something like that.
Because
right now with a fixed building height, you're driven to that flat box.
Yeah.
And if you provide an incentive to go to give them another 10 feet to get a gabled roof, they still get the 5 stories, usable 5 stories, and then you build a better
building. Yeah, so I think there's definitely a lot that you can do. I mean, you could make standards around variation of materials and modulation to bring out some of the qualities that you just described. So,
So it wasn't I wasn't criticizing you.
No, I didn't take it that way.
But you guys are urban planners. I'm not sure if you're get into design guidelines, but if you do, you know, bringing something back, you know, maybe some other jurisdiction. I mentioned Lagos.
So yeah, I'm going to
look at
that
jurisdictions
one.
That have come up with those type of design guidelines.
It's absolutely something we look at. So, I'll take a look at that example, and we'll go from there. Yes. Did you have another question?
Mr. Singhal.
Yes, sir.
There's been a lot of discussion about building height and making the area more pedestrian friendly. One thing that struck me both in the design proposals around the 80-foot width right of way on 68th, as well as the surveys, is what about bike? What's the general feedback on biking? It looked very, very mixed when I read the survey results. And I see that the proposal in the 80-foot right-of-way essentially eliminates the bike lanes that currently exist in there. So is there a motivation or thoughts on bike lanes?
Yeah, so obviously there's no, you know, final design, and certainly bike lanes could be incorporated into it. But I think, you know, one thing to consider for this type of street, if it's really going to be a pedestrian-oriented retail street, then that kind of becomes your priority. And certainly some communities will not want to allocate, you know, 10 feet to bike lanes to go 2 blocks. Instead, they try to design a street that has sharrows or can share the vehicular lanes with bikes and cars. The other option, which you see in more urban areas, is actually create like a cycle track. So you have like on-street parking, then you have bike lanes, and then the sidewalk, so you get a buffer. So I think it's an open question depending on what the priorities are, but particularly when you start adding on-street parking and you want sufficient vehicle movements, you kind of have to sometimes make some trade-offs around that. So I would say it's an open question. We heard some comments earlier. People absolutely want bike lanes there. The example I showed from Queen Anne was Sharrows, so it's shared lanes. You know, if you're doing Sharrows for like a long commute, definitely not as safe. You would rather have a dedicated lane and some buffer. But if it's, again, like a local access or a main street, people get communities will do Sharrows and it will work okay. So hopefully that answered your question. I think it's to be determined.
Okay. I think one thing that I'm concerned about is that section of street doesn't stand alone. It's part of a larger bike network.
Yeah.
You know, heading west down Lakeview and then... north upstate and even along 60 State Street. So we just have to be careful that we're not breaking the network in the process as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think I guess I would finish that up by saying providing access for bicycles through the neighborhood center is definitely something that would be incorporated into it. I think it's just a matter of how that would occur.
Yes. Mr. Miller brought up something, and it's something that I've been thinking a little about too. Mm-hmm. Is the parking in the middle idea? I'm not a big fan of underground parking for grocery stores for many reasons, which I don't need to enumerate here. But it, you know, University Village has this new parking lot it goes up.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's an attractive structure in itself, but then it is skinned by, it has like storefronts on mm-hmm. the outside of the parking structure.
Mm-hmm.
But then in a place like the Houghton Center location, there's beautiful views up high. So,
yeah.
You know, it's almost like if maybe parking was somehow in the middle and it went up and then there was a capped garden up there, a park, you mm-hmm. know, four stories up or something like that. And then you could look up over, you could see the waterfront, you know, people could maybe buy their food at, you know, the market mm-hmm. and then come up and have a picnic on the roof or goof around and to be kind of a safe pedestrian, you know, that could be some of your public amenity could be worked into the parking garage if the parking garage maybe went up instead of down or something.
Yeah, I think one of the issues with that is for a residential building, you need windows and light on both sides of the building. So mm-hmm. that would be difficult to have a parking structure at the same level as the building. Does that make sense to you?
Well, it wouldn't. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, this is not fully thought out.
Yeah, no, but I mean, I appreciate your thought. And the other thing is, you know, you know, when you're talking about a large development, there's quite a bit of parking that has to be provided. So, you know, if you look at some of the, there's lots of examples of mixed-use developments that end up, for that reason, to minimize their costs a little bit, using a good portion of the first floor for parking. So there's a retail band. And then that first floor, the roof of that in the interior of the building serves as a courtyard. Mm-hmm. But then the upper stories are free because you need the light and yeah. air for the residential
well,
buildings.
Fair enough, yes.
Yeah, so... Hopefully that answers your question.
Okay, I think we have another staff presentation still tonight. Is that on yes. transportation?
Yes.
Okay.
Traffic presentation, and then I will talk about the timeline.
Great. Any last questions for Jeff before we let him off the hot seat? Nope.
You guys were easy on me.
Okay. Thank you so much
for
coming.
Good evening. I'm Jeannie Acutanza from the Transpo Group, and we're working on this team and looking at the transportation issues, and I think many of you were also at the workshop, and we talked about transportation issues. I think some of the things that we came up with from that workshop and have talked to the Transportation Commission involved a range of ideas for prioritizing moving people. So I think people prioritize, just to recap the workshop, people prioritized moving people, meaning how can we move the most people and looking at things that move transit. So that came up in the workshop as a strong solution, something we should really take a strong look at. Some just related to the Houghton Everest Neighborhood Center, a couple of things that people raised were connecting to this center multimodally, so with trails and bike and not just cars. And then some other solutions that we'll be looking at include, like I said, moving transit and better connectivity in the neighborhood. I just wanted to say how our study, the transportation piece of this, will relate to the neighborhood center. So one of the things that we will be looking at will be whatever they come up with as far as a development scenario, we will test using transportation analysis to answer those. What are the traffic operations with and without, you know, a change in land use? One other thing I wanted, before I start with that, one of the things that I wanted to point out with Jeff's discussion on the 80-foot right-of-way, one of the things that, you know, we looked at in the workshop, if you were there, is there's a lot of conflict points today. You know, there's a lot of existing closely spaced driveways, probably way too many of them. I think we had 55, 60 conflict points. And within that little short span, because we have so many driveways and no barriers. So when we talked at that evening, one of the things that were pretty obvious were we would like to solve that problem because there are just too many conflict points, not just with vehicles, but with pets and bikes, because that is an important bicycle corridor. Some of the things we came up with for transportation solutions, one would be looking at other, you know, using the Greenway on 60th Avenue and prioritizing that instead of 68th, or, you know, in concert with 68th. I don't know that you can get away with that, get away from using 68th as a bicycle route. That's an important route in the system, as you mentioned. One of the things that became apparent to us is redevelopment and widening of that right-of-way probably only happens, big changes in that piece that we were talking about with conflict points only comes possible with some of these redevelopment scenarios. So in our study, we will, you know, this goes, these types of improvements would go with the any kind of redevelopment. As they're looking at different land uses, we're going to do a study of the different land uses that they pick. So this is just a sample of different trip generation rates. And I just want to remind you, you know, mid-rise apartments, the trip rates are based on units, something to think about. General retail, I want to point out, office too is based on square footage, but general retail and grocery supermarket, there's a big difference between those as far as trip generation. I just want to make, you know, sure everybody's clear on that, although we know that grocery store is really important. The other thing on the right column, but the potential for bypass, or that's what we call diverted link or pass-by trips. That means for all the trips that are going down the 108th, 6th corridor today, many of them are going on their way home and they stop in and get something from the grocery store. So those trips aren't really necessarily created or generated. You know, they're not a brand new trip. They're somebody coming on their way home, and it's not creating added trips. So there are some of these, it's some of these uses, general retail and grocery, have a potential for attracting trips that are already on the street. And it's not necessarily an additive thing. It's that we consider them pass-by trips. So for example, if you were just thinking about a gas station, you're not gonna go way out of your way, or some small portion of people go way out of the way to get to this specific gas station. For the most part, you're driving by, you're pulling in, getting your gas and going. So it's not generating new trips. So that's what we'll be coming back to you with. And Angela will go over that timeline. Any questions so far about this stuff?
There was one comment earlier about the potential growth in Northwest University.
Mm-hmm.
When you're doing your traffic analysis, you'll be looking at that amongst... Excuse me.
Not only
general background growth and building that into your
right. Mind. Not only Northwest University, but growth in general. Every time I talk to communities today, you know, it's every community is seeing not only a fulfilling their growth targets as far as what they expect, trip generation, but they're accelerating. People are seeing their 20-year growth horizons being met, you know, at an accelerated rate. So we're going to take that into consideration. The city's comp plan is a 2035 plan, and that's what we would we will look at that horizon year, and that includes all kinds of background growth.
Thank you.
Yeah. On your trip generation, you'd mentioned you're going south to capture the university, and that you're looking at the area as a whole. Mm-hmm. Can you talk specifically about how some of the areas that were brought up earlier that are under redevelopment right now, that are close proximity, and how far your exact sphere of looking at this goes, and then how the other projects outside bridal trails, et cetera, will influence us in terms of your traffic analysis.
Yeah, and add on if I miss anything. The 2035 comprehensive plan is based on a travel demand model that includes land use citywide, not only citywide, but region-wide. So that's what we'll be using. We'll be using growth patterns across the region, and they're built into this travel demand model. So we're going to look at growth across the region. We use it's a targeted Bellevue, Kirkland, Redmond model, and so we have a lot of detail in those areas. We can talk about what those land uses are. It will be consistent with the growth targets that the city has identified in their comp plan. So we will be consistent with that, and then we'll include on top of that, you know, this incremental increase in development. We've looked at the zones around in the area to see, are there any that we should be, you know, reconsidering, but we want to stay true to the comp plan as our baseline.
Just want to add too, at the next meeting in January, we'll be coming back with a menu of potential improvements for the area, mm-hmm. a wide range and a wide, menu of things to look at. So we'll be presenting those along with the land use scenarios.
Any other questions?
I have a question I have no idea when to ask, so here it is.
Already.
The parking, this angled parking you talked about on 68th Street, mm-hmm. I don't see how that is. I mean, was that idea is that's going to function for the buildings fronting on 68th Street or something? And, you know, isn't that going to interfere with the traffic and our arterial? And, you know, I just don't get that. You know,
I think I think the takeaway concept is
Jeff. We need to get to the mic. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I would have asked you. I wasn't sure if she was going to, you know.
Yeah, no, that's okay.
Question or what?
Yeah. So I guess I would say that the concept is simply looking at adding parking on the street. It could be angled. It could be parallel parking. But the idea of to create a pedestrian-friendly streetscape, you really got to have some buffer between the traffic and the vehicles.
That I've heard.
And also providing convenient parking for those businesses is the other piece. Because for smaller scale retail, you know, and I did a parking study on this for King County, looking at mixed use sites. When you have small scale retail and you have underground parking, it tends not to get used that much because people just don't think of it.
So that's what's happening here.
Yeah. So focus. Yeah. I guess the takeaway is. Focus more on the concept of adding on-street parking than whether it's angled or parallel. That would be something.
Okay, well, I still don't get how the on-street's going to work, but I don't want to belabor the point right now because it isn't like you've just got storefronts like we have down here. You've still got centers with more parking in the back, right?
Right. It would be to facilitate the redevelopment where there would be retail on the street. I mean, right now, the code actually requires that. If you went to build...
Right.
Met Market or any of those properties, you can't have parking between the building and the street.
Right.
So the precedent is already there. And to make that work, having on-street parking, I think, would help with that.
Okay. You know?
So there's a balance point with traffic, though.
Mm-hmm. And I was just going to add on to that. One of the, you know, you just have to imagine that all those driveways would be gone, right? So on-street parking might be ideal at that point. It would just be a straight edge of sidewalk for a good distance. And then, you know, something we were talking about today was it would be nice to have a buffered bicycle lane, and that buffer could be the parking. So I'm going to think, we're going to think about it.
Just out of curiosity, the Mimika answered my question about if they didn't have on-street parking, could you get two through lanes, and would that alleviate traffic?
Oh, good. I get to answer that. Yeah. the two lanes, I mean, we can test this. For the most part, it's such a short distance, it wouldn't help a whole lot. It might help for turn lanes at the intersection. That's about it. That's what I would say. You could, but yeah, certainly 80 feet gives you quite a bit of width.
But it can only go so far west.
Absolutely. The trestle there today. Yeah.
And then north, you end up buying all kinds of right of way if you want to get to 405.
Right.
Okay. Thanks. Okay. Is that, okay. So, staff then?
I'll just talk a little bit about timing. Okay, so I'm back to talk about the schedule. So I want to start by saying I passed on an email to you from Security Properties, the representatives for PCC, just, and I pass it on late this afternoon, so I don't know that everybody had a chance to see it or read it. But what they brought up and what I wanted you to know is that they're trying to start a conversation with the neighborhood, both the Central Houghton and Everest neighborhoods, and just key players to see how people feel about redevelopment of that site and additional height and trade-offs which may be made, or incentives for the community if there was additional height. They went to the Central Houghton neighborhood last week, I think, either earlier, I can't remember, earlier this week or last week. They will be going to the Everest Neighborhood Association in January. So all this is to say that's one piece that they're working on that we'd like to give them more time to do. Other property owners are also talking to residents. And also, we feel that we have more work to do and would like more time. So we are going to be going to the council proposing that we'll have a little extra time on this project. This is the revised schedule that we will be proposing, and I'd be interested to see if you support that. And then also, when we're done, let's talk a little bit about what we're going to see at the next meeting. So we're having the meeting tonight, and this joint study session format seems to work well. It's a little difficult for you having to go to different night meetings and stuff, but it does seem to work well, so hopefully we can continue to do that. We have the meeting tonight, and what we'd like is just some general direction at the end of the meeting on how to proceed. If we're on the right track, you know, what you'd like to see next time. I'll be going to the city council on the 3rd, so right after the holidays, to bring forth a change to the resolution. And we'll be asking for this to be continued to April 30th, so allow an additional 3 months. Right now, you are supposed to have your recommendation completed by the end of January, which would mean one more meeting, and that seems pretty fast at this point. Then on the 17th, we'll go to a study session of the City Council just to kind of bring them up to date on what the work that's been done so far, because there has been a lot of work done. We just feel that we need to do more. We're assuming that they agree on the 3rd, the rest of this schedule will be the same. If not, then we'll have to have a public hearing in January. Transportation Commission will be updated again in January. To tell them more about what Jeannie her group has been working on. She's already been there twice, to talk to them. On the 26th, we'd like to have another joint study session rather than the hearing that we had originally planned. And we're thinking that we'll do the same thing again before that study session, have the 6 to 7 o'clock time for people to come in and just talk and, you know, ask questions. It's a little more informal and seemed to work well tonight. That would be a study session. And at that point, we'd like to get some direction from you on the comp plan would say. You know, so that's the more general view. What kind of height are we talking about? Is it pedestrian-oriented? The type of thing that is in place already for Central Houghton, we need to be looking at for Everest. And then if you think zoning incentives are appropriate, what would they be? Then we would plan to come back on February 23rd for another joint session. And at that, I don't know yet. It could be that would be the hearing, or it could be we'd need another study session. So that'll be decided in January. But we need to get more specific then about the zoning and the comp plan direction. At the latest, we would have the joint public hearing on March 23rd. At that point, obviously, you'd have exact wording for the comp plan and what the zoning code would look like, any design guidelines. Everything needs to be in place for that hearing. And that's why I'm iffy about that February meeting, because I don't know if we'll have it all by then. That gives us April to get the recommendations together for the city council. And at that point, we may have two separate meetings so that you can each talk with your own groups about what you'd like to recommend, or we can do a joint meeting. It'll be up to you how you want to handle that, but we have some time to decide. So all that is to say that we're thinking that it would be good to recommend that the resolution be changed and that we go until April 30th. And at that point, both Planning Commission and Houghton Community Council would be able to tell the council, the city council, what they would recommend on this project. So I'd be interested to hear what you think about that and if you support it. And then let's talk about what we need for the next meeting.
Great.
Eric?
Yes.
Angela, I think it's a great idea.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
Angela, I think it might be a good idea, Angela, if when we meet, maybe we break down groups of topics that we can discuss, planning, parking, coverage, just different elements that we can talk about instead of kind of the wild range. It might help us focus in on points a little better.
Okay.
Not that we can't maybe jump back and forth, but at least have topics to help kind of dive us into the...
Yeah. I think that's a good idea and something that we can do. One of the first things that you need to tell us is if our continuum and the way we're looking at it at this point, if you want to continue that way. So in other words, we've got the three stories potentially in some areas with five stories and incentives in other areas. Do you want us to pursue that further? And then if you do, then we'll start getting into more details. And I think some help with that tonight would be good.
Well, I guess first let's just wrap up the schedule. Is there anybody?
Okay.
Anybody? Yes.
Quick question. Besides the hearings and the study sessions, are there any other events for getting public input that are scheduled or need to be scheduled?
No, not city events. As I said, I think that property owners, particularly on the north side in the Everest, are scheduling on their own event or chances to talk to the public. We were not planning on doing more except these open question and answer periods before our meetings with you.
Okay. I do understand that the representatives from PCC have met with the Central Houghton Neighborhood Association and are planning a meeting with the Everest Neighborhood Association next month.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Is there any connection between what went on at those meetings and getting back to us? Is there a loop connection?
Yeah. Yes, there will be. I mean, again, it's their meetings and their chance to talk.
Sure.
But We're interested in hearing what they're, I think it will come with some type of proposal from them saying, you know, we can do these things. We're willing to do these things. And then, of course, we'll all have to look at it and see if we think those things are reasonable. But yes, we're definitely talking to them. Yeah.
Any other thoughts on the schedule?
I wholeheartedly support extending the schedule. As far as input on, at the last meeting, I specifically requested the impacts to the public of the continuum, the development continuum, not just all of the, you know, what we can expect as far as increased development opportunities, but also what are the potential impacts to most notably the traffic, but any other potential impacts. That, you know, we're dancing around that. Until that is more concrete, then we have an impasse between public opinion, that what the neighbors are talking about, and what we're talking about, and that's got to be resolved.
Right, and I would agree, and I would say we understand the traffic impact. Can you give me, we'd like some help in what else you'd like us to study. We understand that the public has concerns about the height. You know, some people do not want to see any additional height. Other than that, we talked about this and weren't quite sure what to put on that continuum.
I just want to see a response. I want you to respond to what the feedback we got from the public when we had our meeting at the Northwest University.
Okay, so basically, we heard about height, traffic, parking. So put those somehow on the continuum. Right.
Those are the big issues, and those need to be represented. And mm-hmm. you know, right now, I think everybody's assuming a worst case scenario. They're saying, oh my God, if we go up five stories, well then it's going to be an Armageddon, and it's going to be terrible. It's just mm-hmm. and I don't know what. None of us really have an objective evaluation of that, and we need something that's giving us something that really puts it in perspective. You know, how much of an impact is it going to be if we go to these different levels on the development continuum? If it's minuscule, well, then then it's not so much an issue. If it's huge, we need to address it. And
so it sounds like what would be good is for the next meeting, we have that continuum, but we give you more information. In other words, Jeannie was saying definitely she's going to get that traffic information for you with the larger development.
Right.
You know, we'll talk about what kind of parking is needed and how we think that could be provided.
Right.
The height, you know, the step backs are one way to work with that. We'll see if what else we can come up with. I mean, for some people, I think anything over what's there now is not acceptable, and we just need to express that.
Yeah, you know, I would say that, like what Mike was talking about, I think that if you have representations of what could be done to minimize the impacts of that height, you know, everybody tends to think worst case scenario, and, you know, if we can give examples of how it can be moderated to make it an attractive alternative, it's going to make a big difference. And maybe there's a point along here where maybe we want to consider some sort of a random survey of people. You know, it can be done without a huge expense to get feedback if we're lacking it. I don't know if we're going to be there, but I would like to at least entertain that as a possibility along this process. If my concern is that right now, as has been stated earlier, the sentiment at that meeting at Northwest University was overwhelmingly opposed to the larger development.
Right.
That's real. And so now whether that is representative of the community as a whole or it was just a vocal minority, I don't know. But mm-hmm. maybe there's a point where we have enough uncertainty about the true public feeling that we should consider doing some sort of a random survey.
We did do a survey.
I understand that.
Yeah.
That's what we...
I don't know that the results were conclusive as far as, you know, how people feel about it.
Okay. Well, let's... that's fine. I think if everyone agrees, I think we understand what you'd like to see at the next meeting, if that's representative of what others feel.
I would support that.
Yeah. Me too. I just... My two cents. I think it's vital that we push it back further. I think it'd
be
unmitigated disaster to go forward with the public hearing in January. The other thing I would add to that is we heard a lot tonight, I think particularly from Jeff, that I just don't feel like we're quite there on knowing what it is that the neighborhood wants. And you know, we have our own study sessions we're talking about. I don't know how to do it, but it would be nice if we could build in some more opportunities for community input about what it really is they value. And I think that now that we're starting to get closer with some, you know, real concrete examples of what it is, what it would look like, what it would be like, I think it'd be easier for people to say, oh, this is what I like, this is what I don't like, to be able to share and communicate their values. So I don't know how we go about doing that, but I would like to see more built into the schedule, more opportunity for us to hear and to understand what it is that is valued by the neighborhood.
Can I ask
you? Yeah, please.
I mean, this may be opening the floodgates to something that is maybe not a good idea, but I was going to say, like, I brought in those photos today of a mixed-use development, you know, that several stories, you know, that I thought was attractive and could work in that mm-hmm. situation. Is there any way that instead of the city presenting pictures of what, you know, if we could try to solicit, you know, people to like, and maybe there's a consensus. I mean, maybe there's actually, you know, pictures out there of mixed use developments or whatever where, you know, there is a consensus. Just like, yeah, if it looked like this, we could, you know, we could accept the height if it looked like this, if it had the gabled roofs or it had the right. this, it was brick and it was not, you know, concrete and that kind of thing. I don't know, but I think the public keeps having to respond, but they really don't get to share. You know, it's like, here's a survey and we've come up with these questions for you to respond to, but it's just like, what about all the input that maybe the citizens might be able to share. I don't know how to do that.
Well, no, actually, you had said something about that at the last meeting. We talked about it and didn't quite get there. But one idea we had, see if you think this would, is to just, you know, put it up on the webpage, send it out through the listserv and say, if you have thoughts, you have pictures, send them to us.
Okay.
And we can do that, and maybe that might be a good response. And then we can bring those to you and show you that what we've received. I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's a way to find out.
That would
simple
be fun
way.
To kind of see. I mm-hmm. mean, if you do get responses, or if people came to the next meeting with some other things, and if we tacked it up, or we could display it,
it's worth a try.
Oh,
yeah.
Everybody likes this thing, or there's such a range of difference. There's no way we're ever going to.
Yeah.
Agree. I mean,
yeah.
it'd be nice to know.
Okay. Well, we will do that, and let's see how that works. We'll give that a try. Okay.
I don't think it can hurt.
Yeah.
Yes.
I guess I don't know if the previous surveys have done this, so apologize if I am covering already covered ground, but I get the sense that we've presented a lot of options. Would you like A, B, C, D, and E, where all five options are all desirable, but they don't really work well together? Would you like lots of retail and no traffic? It's like, yes.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so. I mean, one of the challenges in a situation like this is really what you're trying to do is get the community to evaluate what is really more important. You know, reducing traffic, having more retail, and those trade-offs don't feel like they've come through in any of the survey data that I've seen.
Right. I think you're correct. It's difficult, and that's what we're trying to get to with that continuum, but it needs work. I think, because there are all these things are trade-offs, and you're right, the responses that we got often are like that. I mean, we'd all like no traffic and more retail and all those things.
We all
and yeah, without the traffic.
Without the traffic.
And a place to park when you go there. And so anyway, but I hear you, and we will work on that, because I think that is the point that we need to. We need to understand, everybody needs to understand the trade-offs to make an informed decision.
I'm good now.
Okay. So you were curious to hear from us what we thought about the continuum. I think the feedback has been fine, but let's add
work on it.
Work on it. Yeah. Add some of the trade-offs to it. Did we give you enough feedback on what else to study?
Yeah. I think so. I think I'm hearing that you want to bring forward the concerns of the community and how they work with the continuum too, and what the trade-offs are. You get this, but then you lose this. More of that kind of information. Obviously, more information on the traffic, but also on parking and height and other things. So we'll work on that.
Mr. Kapler.
Angela, you'd also ask if it was worthwhile to continue studying the no development versus middle versus high development potentials, and I would say, from my standpoint, I think yes, we should continue to study all of it, especially in light in the Central Houghton plan. It was specifically discussed then and is in the plan up to the higher height. And so I think that all of them need to be continued to be flushed out and discussed to make sure that we're analyzing all the potentials there and can come to the right conclusions. Okay. So I think we ought to continue.
Ms. Curtis?
Would you please add to your list something along what Betsy was asking about occupancy rates, similar developments, like how quickly do the retail fill up, what kind of things are in the retail?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I will, and also some of that will be how we regulate it. As I said, if we require, say, a grocery store or larger, so that's we can tell you different ways that it could be regulated to get different results too.
And I'd also like to add some information about residential, also. Occupancy rates on residentials.
So you mean, when you say occupancy rates,
well,
how soon do they fill up?
Exactly.
Or okay.
Mr. Singhal?
Yeah, I have one concern about the continuum, and it was raised actually fairly late, which is if that middle option, the 35-foot option, if the sense is that that's not going to actually be economically viable, that no developer would do anything just for, lose the rents in order to take something offline in order to get only a marginal increase, we should probably make that assessment relatively quickly and discard the option. Because I worry that we'll spend a lot of time pursuing a path that really won't make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And if it does, if it's not going to make a difference, we really shouldn't be trying to, just make policy changes for no upside.
Right.
Ms. Weber? Oh, sorry, I think staff has something to jump in with real quick.
Just one comment, though. It might be appropriate for some of the outlying parcels that we're looking at, so that may be an option that might fit with some of the properties on the periphery. So we kind of want to keep it there as kind of a benchmark, but understand the comment and where that might be going.
Okay, sorry. Ms. Weber?
Angela? It's my understanding, and I might be wrong, that the comprehensive plan isn't finished yet for the Everest area.
That's, well.
And that they were very upset to hear the words five stories. And I know that the Houghton area didn't like five stories, and yet we're, all these things that we're presenting to each other are all mentioning five stories. I don't have a request as to what you can do about it. I just want to state it.
Okay.
Do you agree with me?
If I could respond to that, as far as the Central Houghton neighborhood plan, we did spend 2 years, I'm sure you remember, you were here, working on that plan. And we had an advisory group, and I can't say that everybody was happy with it, but I don't feel that everybody was unhappy with it either. We worked very hard on that plan. And that plan says five stories, and it is in place now. And that's not to say you can't change it, but I think it's unfair to say that it somehow appeared. It didn't. We worked on it, and that's what we came up with.
But Everest isn't done
but
yet.
But Everest, right? You are correct. They have not looked at their plan in, it's probably 30 years now, and we should be looking at that and too, and that's what they were saying. They wanted to be sure that they had adequate time to look at their plan also, and that's what we're trying to give them now.
So.
Mr. Whitney.
I want to comment on the five-story thing just to keep it in perspective, and that is I want to remind you that, and I'm going to go back and re-listen to the tapes myself just to make sure I don't have a false recollection. It was very contentious, and we agreed on the up to five stories.
Correct.
It was conceptual, and it was dependent upon a joint Houghton-Everest
yes.
business plan.
That's right.
It needed to be verified by that. We absolutely did not say under no circumstances would we not allow five. It wasn't like you can have five stories no matter what the impact is to the public. We did not agree to that.
Oh, no, not
okay,
at all.
Okay, so I just want to make it clear that we aren't locked into five stories if this Houghton-Everest business plan doesn't support it.
What we will need to do, though, the wording would need to be changed.
I understand that, but it was, from the beginning, it was subject to this study. It needed to be done on a comprehensive plan for both sides. It was not appropriate for us to have a plan that was just for our side without considering the impact on it for the whole business district.
And it does say that.
Okay.
I agree.
And so I want to make sure, because I don't want to get this mantra that we're committed to five stories.
Right.
We're not. You know, I think that if it can be justified by this process, then...
So you'd have to change the zoning to change the plan. That's the result of what this may come out.
Well, that's what we're doing right now.
Exactly.
I mean, that's why we didn't agree to change the zoning.
Exactly. I mean, this is
because
why
it needed to be done through this comprehensive process for the whole business district.
I understand, but the policy direction right now is the five stories, but there are caveats with that, but...
That's what I'm reminding you is the caveats. Yeah,
right.
That's
sure.
the point.
So that's why we're having this process.
I understand.
The whole point.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that we keep it in perspective. The other thing that I want to add is that as in response to the three-story thing, I think it's obvious that the more stories you allow, then that does give you a lot more potential for redevelopment. That's just obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not three stories is feasible in that location is not, I think, I don't think we should rule it out.
Mm-hmm.
I would very much like to talk to people who are absolute experts in development that are doing it. And I'm going to actually try to seek them out myself personally and see what kind of feedback I get, because that's a prime location. And I think there was somebody who commented that there are examples where three stories with structured parking has been done in the greater Seattle area. Not many, but in prime locations,
mm-hmm.
it may pencil out. Now, I'm not a developer, I don't know, but if that's true, then I don't think we should be saying this, that it's not possible. And I want to make sure that we're being real about this. So I'm not saying this to say I oppose, that I'm supporting that option. I just want to be objective about it.
Yeah, and that's why we have it on the continuum.
Right.
So I'm hearing we should keep it there. Yeah.
Unless you can demonstrate conclusively that there's no objective way that you could develop it that way. I don't think you can.
Mr. Goggins and Mr. Peterson. And Mr. Kaplan.
Yeah, I'm kind of jumping on the bandwagon, but I disagree with the concept of quickly wrapping up the middle way, the 35-foot, and canceling, discarding it. Because I think, you know, for the near term, maybe, it's not going to be a good option. Nobody's going to redevelop to get there. But in the long term, they may, because, you know, if they're not going to develop for 15, 20 years, maybe that'll look good when that's on the clock. But five stories at this point, I think, looks excessive to me, but I'm willing to look at all the options and the continuum and the benefits and the problems in the neighborhood. And I think the middle way might end up being the ultimate answer. I don't want to discard it too early.
Mr. Peterson?
Yeah, I think we have to leave three stories in there, whether or not it's not up to us to figure out whether it's feasible or not. The heck with that. And technology changes, so maybe it will be later. So, yeah, I'm opposed to the idea of saying, it's nice to be able to say, okay, maybe there's alternatives we can rule out, but I don't think we can ever rule that out. We shouldn't be trying to make that judgment. So that, I think, that has to stay in there. And, I like the idea of seeing some pictures and stuff. I almost think it's better for maybe the public come up with some. It's better for the staff to suggest some too, or the consultants to show some examples of that sort of stuff.
I'd like to ask staff if they could quickly for us go through the Central Houghton Neighborhood Plan and discuss how the caveats are specifically outlined as part of that plan.
If you have the slide that shows the actual policy language, I think Jeff
has. And what would have to be changed. You'd mentioned something that would have to be changed, and I just want to make sure that the caveats are clearly spelled out and we didn't miss something. I was involved in the Lakeview plan, right. So I wasn't – if you could help with that, that would be great.
Oh, so you're saying for the next meeting, or are you saying right now?
If you don't have it like super handy, the next meeting would be great.
Yeah. Okay, sure. I don't think we have it with us. Okay. So, yeah, maybe that's a good place to start next time, is to go through what's actually been written about it.
Great.
That's a great idea.
And also the broader context of the comprehensive plan, too, is we have to look at that as well. So, yeah, we can begin to bring that forward.
Help us, get the tie together. Exactly. What needs to change.
Mr. Beck?
Well, I sort of adding on to the thing about why keep the three-story involved is it may be appropriate in some locations, not all, just as the five-story may, and the no improvement may be appropriate. And so the step after next might be to start breaking
the areas down
in more targeted areas as to which might be the most appropriate.
Yeah, Mr. Miller.
Just one quick follow-up comment, Angela. When we were talking earlier about design guidelines, you again talked about setbacks and stepbacks.
Right.
If the staff could run out to other jurisdictions, probably not in this area, but going a little bit further afield and see if you can get a little bit more creative about design guidelines than just setbacks and stepbacks and boxes. Because even if we did three stories, the opportunity for providing height bonus to get peak roofs, gabled roofs, that sort of thing, I think it's going to make it look far more appealing than just your standard box. And whether somebody wants to redevelop in three stories or five stories, they need that height to get the usable square footage. But if we gave them a little bit more height to get a peak roof on it,
something more interesting.
Something a whole heck of a lot more interesting.
Okay.
Quite frankly, a little bit more residential character, too, irrespective of the height.
There is some language in the downtown Kirkland design guidelines that is not just wedding cake. And it talks about articulation of facade and stuff like that.
Well, not just the facade. I'm talking about peak roofs.
Yeah.
Well, building mass, too.
Carter's correct. We do have it actually in our zoning code, too. But we can bring that forward and also look at other areas, too, see how they do it.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Okay, there are no minutes to read or approve. Administrative reports, calendar update. I know the city council dealt with the LID.
Well, they adopted the critical area ordinance last Tuesday on a vote of 6-1. So that's going forward. Thank you all for your help in putting that together. And on the LID, as you recall, in November, the council did not reach a consensus because of the issue regarding exemptions. Some council members preferred the Planning Commission recommendation. Some council members preferred the Houghton Community Council recommendation. So they came back on Tuesday, and they had a full council quorum there of 7 members, and 4 voted to agree with the Houghton Community Council, and 3 voted to agree with the Planning Commission. So the exemptions have not changed at this point, and of course that'll come back next year for at some point for further discussion on open space and LID techniques and the exemptions. So they did pass the rest of the ordinance. We separated out the 2 ordinances so that they could at least pass the body of the regulations and then deal with that one issue independently. So
the effective date for the critical areas remained in
March 1st.
Okay. Calendar update. So we are, I guess we'll sort of find out what council says. I mean, presuming that the schedule flies.
Yeah, we have met with the council committees. I think they're pretty open to the change. I think they appreciate the Houghton Community Council and Planning Commission having more dialogue on this and want to give the time instead of pushing that too fast. That'll be January 3rd. And then we are planning on briefing the City Council on January 17th on the progress of the Houghton Everest Neighborhood Center Plan and the 6th Street Corridor Plan. So they'll have a better understanding of where we are with this process and where we're going at that time. As Angela mentioned, we do have a joint meeting on January 26th, and you saw the schedule up there. Planning Commission is meeting on January 12th on the Thin Hill Neighborhood Plan, and at that point, we also maybe want to bring the draft planning work program, or at least have a discussion on some of the projects for the work program for next year.
Great. Okay. Any other comments from the audience tonight? Mr. Carlson.
Bring it on, Chris.
All right. You have 2 minutes.
Yeah. Actually, I'm only going to make one, and it's really not so much a comment as a query to you. How many bodies do you need me to bring with T-shirts saying 5 lanes equals 5 stories before you'll take us seriously? Because January 17th or January 26th, I'm going to rally the troops. She doesn't believe that our neighborhood is against this. And I'm going to rally the troops and show you this, not just me being in. Honestly, for some reason, everybody else was at the choir concert tonight. Sadly, you're up against middle school. Mike is not in choir, therefore I showed up. But which meeting would be more effective? Is it more effective to bring a whole lot of irate voters to the city council meeting or to one of your joint study sections? I'm just querying you for the political utility of. I really don't want to waste the time of calling in favors. I want to do it and do it effectively.
I would suggest you I hope you can appreciate that we're extending this process.
I appreciate that you're extending the process.
And that we're seeking more, public involvement and more information before we go anywhere. Yeah. So hopefully that gives you some reassurance that we're not just railroading this.
And no, that's the whole thing. I don't think she's hearing us. You are hearing us, actually.
The last lady who spoke.
She's talking about five stories is an assumption.
Yeah, but she's a very good girl. She's trying.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson.
Yeah. Anyway, so thank you.
Okay. Mr. Pruitt, real quick.
Keep your tender dry.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we have nothing else on our agenda tonight.
I'll be absent January 12th.
Okay. Oh, right. If anyone else knows, they will not be here for a meeting. If you could let Paul know.
Can I ask that we have no further meetings scheduled on Seahawk game days, including playoffs? Is that something we can agree on?
Yeah. What's the score before we talk about
playoffs? Okay. I don't know
why I hear it recorded.
Oh, I'll look it up for you.
Just saying. At least get through this season, including the playoffs, with no more meetings on our game days.
And the Super Bowl.
Yes.
Ms. Weber and then Sunday.
No meeting on Sunday.
Yeah. All right, let's try to wrap that. Ms. Weber.
Everybody have a Merry Christmas.
Oh, thank you. Paul, did Paul what? No, you're fine? Okay. Okay, in that case, this meeting is adjourned.
To the central.